The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York, and producing today is not Taylor. It's Daniel Dopp in the foothills of Connecticut. Daniel, welcome to the show again. It's always great to talk with you. You know, it feels like every year I get to do about three, four, five shows with you. But I got a question for you right off the top.
All right, bring it. What's going on?
What are you doing on Monday morning? Because I am not at all confident about Taylor's plan to go to the Outer Banks this weekend for a bachelor party, have his wife drive him from said bachelor party on Sunday up to Connecticut, and then have him be ready to do a show at 7:15 on Monday morning. What about you?
No, there's no way. I mean, listen, I love Taylor and he is very responsible, but there's no way that I'm assuming that that's going to happen on Monday. Like, come on. It's a whole weekend full of fun. Are you kidding me?
I think by Monday morning, he might be at like 0.12. Okay.
Yeah.
after that bachelor party and his wife drives him off, there's no chance. So I'm going to keep your phone number. I might be calling you Monday morning from the Atlanta airport.
Is it possible the last time that I filled in for this show was when I did Josh Macri's bachelor party? Is that possible?
That is possible. Right. Exactly. We had the same issue, I think.
I think so too. And listen, I love Taylor. He does a fantastic job. He is so into it. But I will always remember. I feel like that was a big thing. Josh would always leave for like a week or 2 weeks right as baseball started, and it's like, Josh, what are you doing, man? Buster's counting on you.
Oh, exactly. But he was great, and as you say, Taylor's great too. All right, today on the show, I'll be hearing from Sarah Langs. We'll be playing the numbers game, and we'll be talking with Jeff Passan. Lots to get to speak to Jeff about. And we start with this, a big blow for the Atlanta Braves. Braves right-hander Mike Soroka has experienced a setback in his recovery from surgery to repair his torn right Achilles tendon. It will have a follow-up procedure next week. So we don't know if and when Mike Soroka is going to pitch in 2021. I'm going to ask Jeff how big of a deal this is. The Yankees have 7 COVID-19 positives among their coaching support staff. That according to Aaron Boone. They announced the other day that third base coach Phil Nevin had tested positive. First base coach Reggie Willits, Mac Blake, their pitching coach, also has tested positive, and 4 staffers. But to this point, no player has tested positive. They did take Gleyber Torres out of lineup yesterday for health and safety protocol. The injury hits just keep on coming for the Dodgers. They shut down Josiah Gray, their top pitching prospect, due to a right shoulder impingement. Backup third baseman Edwin Rios is going to miss the rest of the season after having surgery on his right shoulder. And as expected, right-hander Dustin May underwent Tommy John surgery on Wednesday. He posted on Instagram, gave a thumbs up. He's probably going to not be coming back until the summer of 2022. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Speaking of the Dodgers, they face the Mariners, and Max Muncy helped them blow out Seattle.
He swings and hits a high drive to center field. Lewis going back to the track. Lewis looking up and is gone. A home run. Max Muncy. Maxwell swinging the silver hammer again tonight. Adds 2 more, and the Dodgers leading 4-1.
That sound from AM 570 LA Sports. Today is a big day for the Mariners. Jared Kelnick and another top prospect will be making their major league debuts. Today, we'll be talking with Jeff about that. The White Sox and the Twins. The White Sox are just taking off. And for Andrew Vaughn, a signature moment.
Vaughn, deep left center. God, he's done it. His first major league home run.
Congratulations, Andrew Vaughn. He's on the big board now with his first major league home run.
That sound from ESPN 1000. The Yankees face the Rays, game 2 of their big series. It was 0-0, top of the 7th inning. Aaron Hicks came to the plate.
And that one is served into center field. Catch is made by Phillips. Tagging and scoring is Judge. Going to third is Urshela. It's a big sack fly for Aaron Hicks, and the Yankees have a 1-0 lead.
That call from Michael Kay on the YES Network. Garrett Cole was dealing.
0-2 struck him out swinging. That's strikeout number 10. And the 0-2 struck him out swinging. Adamas strikes out for the third time. 1-2 struck him out swinging at 99. Wow, what a performance. And he finishes by striking out the side. 12 strikeouts for Cole.
That from WFAN. The Yankees win the second game of this series 1-0. After the game, Gerrit Cole talked about pitching in big games.
We certainly enjoy playing in meaningful games. You know, there's a lot going on today, and it's a bit challenging to get focused, I guess, for the game. Once you're there, it's kind of business as usual. So I try to keep that mindset all the time, and I think it's helpful when there's a little bit more on the line.
The Indians and Cubs were tied 1-1, bottom of the 10th inning, and this happened.
Two down, game tied at one. The set, the pitch, a swing and a line drive to right field. Base hit down the line. Game winner, Ahmed Rosario. And he'll get mobbed out behind the mound in front of second base. And the Indians get their second walk-off win of the year.
That, the unmistakable voice of Tom Hamilton on WTAM. The Padres and the Rockies played a doubleheader in game one. The Padres, of course, have lost all these players to COVID-19 health and safety protocol. Got a big hit from Victor Caratini.
2-0 to Caratini. Stevenson set. The right-hander delivers, and that fastball is ripped to right. Headed towards the wall. It is up and out. A grand slam. Victor Caratini. And the Padres take the lead on a line drive slam at Coors Field. 5-1 here in the sixth.
That sound from 97.3 The Fan. The Rockies won game two of that doubleheader. The Padres splitting. We've got them on Sunday Night Baseball coming up this weekend against the Red Hot Cardinals. The Mets and the Orioles in Citi Field. And Michael Conforto helped the Mets beat up Matt Harvey.
Infield in, one out in the fifth. Runner at third, the 1-2. Hit on the ground up the middle. Base hit center field. Conforto gets it done. The R scores from third. Michael Conforto shoots one through the drawn-in infield. For Michael, his 13th run batted in of the year. And the Mets now lead 5-0.
That call from WCBS. But here was a really cool thing from the fans at Citi Field. Matt Harvey got an ovation as he exited the game. Give a listen.
Well, here comes Brandon Hyde, and he's going to pull Matt Harvey here. So let's listen to the ovation for Matt as he leaves the mound with the Mets leading 5-0. Runners at first and second. One out, last of the fifth. Many fans among the about 8,000 in the ballpark are standing and giving Matt a nice round of applause.
Here was Matt Harvey after the Mets 7-1 victory talking about playing in Citi Field and hearing that ovation.
There was a lot of excitement, a lot of memories. I wasn't – obviously there's been so many ups and downs here at this ballpark and with this organization that, I didn't really know what to expect. And what they gave me, what the fans gave me out there was pretty incredible. And I was holding back tears. I'm not going to lie about that. It was pretty hard holding them back, and it reminded me of, a lot of the good memories and coming off the field with, an ovation like that. It brought a lot back, and it was very special to me. Something I'll never forget.
Now, before we get to Jeff and Sarah, ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season. 4 months after the WNBA postponed its season due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the league set out to play a condensed schedule entirely in a bubble, where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also to dedicate their season to social justice. 144 is now available on ESPN+. And for all the fantasy baseball managers, Fantasy Focused Baseball with Eric and Tristan is a must listen. You can find Fantasy Focused Baseball wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code baseball. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. And Jeff, before we get to some big topics you've been writing about, let's talk about the injury that we heard about, or the, I guess, the setback that Mike Soroka of the Braves has suffered. He's going to have another procedure. I don't think anybody can sit here and predict when he's going to pitch again. How big of a deal is this for the Braves?
It's such a bummer, Buster, because I just love watching Mike Soroka pitch. He's got that heavy sinker. He pounds the strike zone. And when the Atlanta Braves were coming into this season, looking at their prospects, they were hoping to get him back, you know, June or so. He had had some shoulder issues as well and really has never been healthy. But when you saw him hobble last year with that Achilles, you just hope that he would have a full recovery. And the fact that the Braves are here right now in the position that they are, getting off to the mediocre start, now not having Soroka back, it hurts. It hurts less, I think, because Waskari Noah, who you spoke so eloquently about on Sunday Night Baseball, has emerged and joined Max Fried, Ian Anderson, and Drew Smyly and Charlie Morton. And they've also got Bryce Wilson. Like, you know, Atlanta's not lacking for starters, but of all the ones that they've got, Mike Soroka may have the most upside. And that's why it's as frustrating as it is.
I don't know if there's a bigger surprise impact player in baseball than a Noah, but there's no more important player now when we're talking about contending teams. You know, when you're talking about a Braves team that has won the division three straight years, yep, they need him to continue this. And I just have loved watching him pitch this year. That slider, we've talked about it on the broadcast. Not many pitchers and starting pitchers in baseball now are two-pitch pitchers and have success. Right. Boy, he absolutely can.
Especially because he doesn't have that off-speed pitch to go away from left-handers. Right. And when a lefty is sitting there, knowing the options are either going to be a fastball or, you know, often a back foot slider, it makes it so much more difficult and puts Anoa out there to have a huge reverse platoon. And he just doesn't. As good as his pitching has been, though, may I say, I enjoy watching him swing the bat more, because it is a phenomenally ugly swing in which he steps in the bucket as bad as any player that I've seen. And yet he hit that bomb to center field. I saw that swing. I'm like, man, this guy is strong as can be, because he is not generating a ton of power from like his hips or from any of the traditional things that you see from hitters these days.
I'm glad you qualified it the way you did. I was going to have to come in with a sledgehammer of reality and predict, like, you agree with me, there's a big offer coming. the Chicago White Sox crushed the Twins yesterday. They're piling up runs. Does it feel like to you that these are the first strides of them just running away with a Central?
So we do power rankings every week at ESPN.com. And even as they had struggled mightily, I had the Los Angeles Dodgers in the top spot all the way through last week. I changed that this week, and I have the Chicago White Sox at number one. And I have them at number one as much because of their starting pitching as anything. Because I think, Buster, if you looked at the beginning of the season, especially before Eloy Jimenez was hurt, and you ranked the three elements of their team, their everyday lineup, their bullpen, and their starting rotation, to me, at least, the rotation was the weakest of the three. And now you're looking at it with Carlos Rodon looking like the best pitcher in the American League so far this season, with Dallas Keuchel, his workmanlike self, and with Dylan Cease seemingly taking that step forward, and with Lance Lynn doing his amazing fastball-only thing, and with Lucas Giolito going into last night's game. Their ace had the worst ERA on the staff. You can argue that the best part of the White Sox this year has been their rotation, and that, you know, Evan Marshall getting tagged a little bit and Matt Foster not being as good in the bullpen has been problematic, but not to the point where anybody is looking at the White Sox and saying anything other than not that they're just the best team in the American League Central, Buster. I think they're the best team in the American League, and I think there's an argument to be made that they're the best team in baseball.
I'm going to have Lance Lynn on the podcast tomorrow to ask him about how the White Sox are being treated in the various power rankings done by the media.
Well, tell him I have them one. Just to like, I want to make sure we get on their good side, right? They're going to be around for a while. That's, you know, the exciting thing about the White Sox is they look like a juggernaut right now, and they're missing two of their best hitters. I was going to try and qualify that, two of their how many best, but you can put Abreu up there. You can put Anderson up there. You can put Moncada up there. Nick Madrigal doesn't have power, but God, I love watching him play. So much fun to watch. Andrew Vaughn finally got his first home run, and he's going to be a force. That team is just really, really good, 1 through 26. And to me, when I'm looking, Buster, at the best teams in baseball, I'm looking as much for depth as I am for star power.
And like the Mets, like the Dodgers, probably like the San Diego Padres before the trade deadline, because they have so much invested in 2021, they will add in what looks to be a great buyer's market. All right, you reported this week that the Mariners promoting Jared Kelnick to make his debut today, as well as Logan Gilbert. Why now, from the Mariners' perspective?
Because they've saved a year of service. I mean, that's that's the flip answer. Jared Kelnick, if you were breaking with your 26 best, would have started the year in the big leagues. I think that's pretty clear. And so, you know, while I jokingly say because of service, I also say it like with my feet firmly planted in reality. Why now, as opposed to a couple weeks from now or a month from now? They wanted to do it at home. They want Jared Kelenic Day. They want Logan Gilbert Day. Like, it's a very exciting day to be a Mariners fan after years of hurt and of bad baseball, and of the pain of knowing that you are not going to be competing. And it's on the horizon now. You know, this Mariners team is about a 500 team right now. I think they're probably playing a little bit beyond their talent level, but you can see the makings of something good there. And when you have a talent like Kelenic, who's got superstar written all over him, and like Gilbert, who's probably more of a, you know, maybe he tops out at a two, may settle into like the three area, but I will take a number three starter 8 days a week, because if you have a guy like him who's got the size, who's got a really good breaking ball, and who can pile up innings, he is incredibly valuable.
You think that Jerry DePoto, I definitely believe this, that he also is trying to thread the needle on a very complicated internal political situation with his own players and his organization after Kevin Mather's really stupid comments made on that Zoom call during the offseason?
I think he's probably got a lot more work to do than the average fan might realize. Like, that clubhouse was genuinely angry. And, you know, Kevin Mather's comments were not just interpreted as Kevin Mather's words, but they were seen by players as the organization's point of view. And the organization extends to Jerry DePoto, and it extends to their manager, Scott Service. And as much damage control as they were trying to execute, Buster, in that period of time, players have very long memories, and that's not the kind of thing that's going to go away anytime soon and is going to take years to fix as opposed to days or weeks or months.
You wrote a great piece in the Winter about Drew Robinson, the former big leaguer who attempted suicide. He lost an eye. He's now moving forward with his life. That documentary will air on tonight at 7 p.m. And I'm curious, now that he started his season in the minor leagues, I know, you know, having worked on stories myself, you get invested in these. What's it like to follow his progress? How do you do that?
I'm going to make one slight correction here. It's 8 p.m. I just want to make sure people do not miss this because it's work that I'm very proud of. And you know, it's in the same vein as your Freddie Freeman story. When you spend time getting to know someone, getting to know their family, getting to know the deepest feelings of their soul, it's impossible not to root for him, and not just him, but what he stands for. You know, Drew Robinson very easily could have walked away from baseball, could have gone on to live his life without trying to be an advocate for mental health. And nobody would have blamed him for that. He's been through an incredibly traumatic thing, and he's just trying to piece his life back together day by day. But from the start, I heard about this. I didn't know Drew's name, but I first heard that a big league player had attempted suicide about a month after it happened, and that he wanted to talk about it. And I was like, boy, is that the right thing? You know, we're always trying to get great stories, but not when it's something that can potentially bring harm to the person who wants to tell it. And I didn't know if he was in the right state of mind to be talking about this quickly. But a couple months later, the same intermediary came back and said, his name's Drew Robinson and he's ready to talk. And from the first time I talked with Drew, I could tell that there was a selflessness about him, in that he understood what he had gone through, how awful it was, and wanted to make sure that others didn't make the same mistakes that he did. And I think what he is doing and what Kevin Love has done and what others around the sporting world have done, show that vulnerability, is something that's radically new in this industry that has for so long been defined by this overt masculinity, and that the idea that talking about your feelings is not something that athletes do. Athletes are people. They go through the same things that you, that I, that everyone here listening to this go through. And the ability for Drew to speak his truth and to tell his story and to be as relatable as he is, to me, is why this baseball thing he's doing right now is just gravy. I mean, regardless of whether he came back or not, whether he hit a home run or not, whether he did any of what he's been doing, he was destined to do great things and help people. And the fact that he's doing it the way he is only making the story that much more compelling.
What kind of feedback, Jeff, has he gotten since your piece first appeared?
I mean, his life has changed, and I think in some ways for the better, and in some ways it's hard, because when you're, and I tried as much as I could to warn him about what was coming, because ESPN is this giant megaphone that blasts out into the sports world. Everybody was going to see this. Everybody was going to hear about it. Everybody was going to know. And there were going to be certain expectations on him, expectations that at times can be unfair on somebody whose mental health has been good and has kept them on the straight and narrow. But for somebody who's been through what Drew has been through, you know, I worried about the danger of that. And I still do in some ways, because he is still as susceptible as he once was. He just now has better tools in place to understand it and to ground himself in this reality that's different than what his brain is sometimes telling him. So, I mean, there will be people who walk up to him in Starbucks when he's in line getting a coffee and thank him. You know, the number of people who have reached out to him, you know, inside of the baseball world is incredible. He was telling me a story a couple of days ago about somebody around in the clubhouse and how they just walked up to him and started talking about some of the things that they're going through right now. And Drew checked, and 45 minutes later, they were still talking. I think people see in him somebody to whom they can relate, and somebody who understands pain, physical and mental, better than just about anyone. And he has this thing about him that is very trustworthy. And so the idea that he's encouraging people to talk, I think others almost take that as an invitation to talk to him, because he, better than anyone, understands what some of the things they're going through feel like.
All right. And that, again, that's going to air tonight at 8 p.m. And congratulations on that. Really cool. All right. Before we go, I want to ask you about the Oakland ballpark situation, which you wrote about earlier this week. What happens next with this?
I would love to say that there's going to be some resolution, but I believe you tweeted the blue ribbon panel to figure out the Oakland ballparks started 15 years ago. And Steve Kettman, the longtime Bay Area baseball writer, tweeted at me. I believe the first time he said that I wrote about the A's exploring a new ballpark was when I broke the news in 1997. And I just thought to myself, in 1997, I was a junior in high school. And now I have a 13-year-old. That's how long this has been going on. And it's staggering to me that they have taken forever. It's sad that it's gotten to this point where Oakland may be losing another team after losing the Warriors, after losing the Raiders. And yet the entire ecosystem of building baseball stadiums is bad for municipalities. It just is. When public funds are going toward billionaires, that is not something that typically behooves a society. And I, you know, I get the fact that if it's not Oakland, it's going to be someone. It's going to happen somewhere. And I get the fact that the A's are putting $1 billion+ in their proposal toward building the actual stadium itself, but it's all the little ancillary things around there. The $12 billion, which is a very large number, Buster, a $12 billion mixed-use development. That's a lot to put on a city. And I know that there are people in the Bay Area who feel like the A's have proposed something this large because there's no way that in the Byzantine politics of California, you're ever going to get anything there passed, and that they essentially have been trying to leverage themselves to be in a position to move to Las Vegas, to Portland, to somewhere else. So I hope there's resolution to this. I would love to see the A's stay, you know, I say this a little bit tongue in cheek, rooted in Oakland, which has been their slogan. I want there to be a happy ending. I just don't know at this point, after a quarter century of haggling, whether that's a reality.
The one difference that's driving this, I talked a little bit about this yesterday with Carl, is I do think that behind the scenes, what's really going on, besides the fact that Major League Baseball wants a resolution for the Oakland Athletics, for the Tampa Bay Rays, they want to move on to expansion. They want to move on to cashing expansion checks. And so they want to get these two situations settled, and then they can pick out the expansion owners. What do you think?
I think that is not an unreasonable thought. It's going to be interesting, though, to see the expansion cost. I think Rob Manfred, in an interview, I think it was with Sportico, talked about the average franchise value in baseball being about $2.6 billion or so. And that's what the expansion fee is going to be. I don't know about that. That seems a little high. And yet when we're talking about billionaires, Buster, it's almost like they're going to look beyond the cost of the franchise and just the fact that you can own a sports franchise, the fact that you're one of 30. It's such an appealing thing. It is such a pelt on the wall of the uber wealthy that, you know, hey, what's the difference between $2 billion and $2.5 billion? It's only $500 million, which to very rich people, crazily enough, is not a lot sometimes.
No, and we've seen that with Steve Cohen, who gets to be the first one to tweet out that Marcus Stroman has a hamstring injury. I mean, you can't put a price on that, right? Oh, my goodness. All right, Jeff, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
I'm going to get that damn Stroman hamstring next time. I'm going to break it. Thank you, Buster.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, well established on the show. You are a Mets fan. What did you think of how Mets fans treated Matt Harvey on Wednesday?
I loved it. I mean, just seeing that standing ovation and all of the emotion that was involved, I thought that was wonderful. I mean, his post-game comments, he was so emotional. And I think that it's just such a wonderful part of the game. I mean, we know, certainly, I think a lot of people think of, you know, game five of the 2015 World Series and the decision to leave him in. And even though that was by no means his last moment in a Mets uniform, I think that people sort of associate him with that and, you know, everything that happened afterwards. But I think that it seemed like fans were really reflecting on the entire journey, which certainly for him, the fact that he's still pitching in the majors right now, I'm not sure that most people would have expected that when they traded him in 2018. So I was glad to, at least in the claps and the ovation I saw, maybe see some perspective there.
Absolutely. You know, as I was just saying to Jeff, David Cone used to tell Yankee teammates, look, you got to remember, they want you to do well. They might boo you, but they want you to do well. All right. We're going to play the numbers game. But because Taylor's out, I'm the one who's going to be the voiceover for your countdown. So we start with number three.
Number three is 100. So we're going to see two top 100 prospects debut tonight in the Mariners, Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert, who's a pitcher. So on the MLB pipeline list right now, Kelnick is number four and Gilbert is 28. He was number 33 entering the year. And the moment I saw the reporting that Gilbert was going to come up, I just had to know if a team had ever had two prospects ranked this high debut for them in the same game. So we don't have this kind of stuff, you know, all the way back, of course, and the concept of prospects is not that old. But since MLB Pipeline began tracking stuff in 2004 and ranking guys, there has never been a team to have two top 35 prospects debut for them in the same game on the same day. And I have to give a shout out to my colleague, Jason Bernard at MLB.com, who went back and forth with me over a couple of hours to figure this out because I just had to know. So there have only been two other teams to even have two top 100 guys debut on the same day. It was the 2016 Padres, Manuel Margot and Hunter Renfroe on September 21st of that year, and the 2013 Marlins with Christian Yelich and Jake Marisnik. So really fun list.
Number two.
Number two is 56. So Gerrit Cole has 56 strikeouts since he last walked a batter, all of that coming this season. That is tied for the most consecutive strikeouts without issuing a walk in a single season since the mound was moved to its current distance in 1893. He's tied with the May and June 2002 Curt Schilling stretch. I mean, it's just incredible. We're certainly seeing a lot of strikeouts this year, but I would say that we can't just attribute this to that because this also requires that control element, which is not necessarily something we're seeing a ton of this year.
And number one.
Number one is 23. So Corbin Burnes has 49 strikeouts and no walks this season, and he's very close to the record to start a season by any pitcher, which is Kenley Jansen in 2017. He had 51 strikeouts before he issued his first walk. And I wrote a story for MLB.com yesterday where I looked at all 23 pitches that Corbin Burnes has thrown in three ball counts this year, just to look at every single one. How close has he come? So 22 of the 23 pitches he's thrown with three balls in the count have been in the zone. So he has not come very close to walk anyone whatsoever. The only one that was out of the zone was pretty low, and Tommy Edman fouled it off. And Tommy Edman actually has given him some trouble in one game. He saw 6 3 ball pitches from Corbin Burnes, but he just hasn't been close.
All right. I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Jeff. How big of a deal is it that Mike Soroka is down and out indefinitely?
I think it's a huge deal. I mean, I think we've all been looking at the Braves and thinking, you know, they're playing better lately for sure, but okay, they're going to get Soroka back at whatever point it is. And it does feel like that timeline was already pushed back, you know, from what we thought it might be over the offseason. But I think that's really concerning. I know Charlie Morton's going today. He gave up a ton of runs his last time out. And overall, I think that some of the rotation feels a little bit stopgappy. And so I think that's going to be a real problem for them. And Mike Soroka is just so good. I mean, 2 years ago now.
Man, Waskar and Noah, wow. Like the importance for him to the Braves at this point compared to what we thought before the year, enormous, and he has looked great. So, yeah, big deal for the Braves having to deal with this. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, time for some Bleacher Tweets. As always, if you want to get your question onto the show, use the hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. This first one comes from Mr. Jakey RS. The Oakland A's won 97 games in 2018, 97 games in 2019. They played 600 ball in 2020, and now they lead the league in wins after taking two games from the Rays, followed by two games from the Red Sox. I mean, what do they have to do to be considered legit, Buster Olney?
Well, Mr. Jakey, they are legit. They've been in the playoffs, right? I would say this, that, you know, leading the league in wins so far with the parity that we've seen in baseball is not as big of a deal. But the funny thing is, you know, when the A's got off to that rough start, I remember talking about how it always feels like that when we get to the end of May, that's when Oakland really just sort of figures it out and then they just take off. Yeah, if I were to, you know, repick the division now, the American League West, I would pick Oakland to win it.
Okay. This one comes from, boy, what, how do you think I say this? Olivier? It's not Oliver. I think it's Olivier.
Olivier, I'd say.
Let's say Olivier. Hey, Buster. You've been commenting about expansions and moves a bit recently. You have made your love for Nashville very clear. But you never mentioned Montreal, whereas it is very much in the conversation here. Am I foolish to get my hopes up? Is there no love?
Let's make this absolutely clear. It all comes down to money. Right? I mean, I can talk about how I think Nashville is a proven city. It's already got some professional sports teams there. The Titans, my son's favorite team, you know, the Preds. But it's just going to come down to what the bidding is, right? Which guy is going to step up? Which billionaire is going to step up and go to Major League Baseball? Yes, we're ready to have a team in our city. And if that happens in Montreal, that's possible. I would say that when I talk to baseball executives, generally because of the history of the team leaving Montreal, there's more skepticism about Montreal being one of the teams that winds up with a big league club, say 5, 10 years from now.
Okay.
Our last one we have comes from PK Steinberg. So if home runs and no hitters are too common and they've lost some of their allure, then does that mean that the triple is the sexiest play in baseball? Hitting the cutoff man also too seems rare since guys just want to show off their cannon of an arm. I miss fundamentals. Buster, is this fair, or is this just old man get off my lawn? I miss fundamentals of baseball.
I got to say, I've always thought, Daniel, I'm going to bring you in here in a second. The most exciting play for me in baseball is a triple by a really fast guy. Mm-hmm. Like when I first started covering baseball, Deion Sanders hitting a triple, that was really fun. Now, Shohei Ohtani hitting a triple, that has always, you know, been my favorite play in baseball. And yes, a great cutoff is an excellent play. I still think probably on SportsCenter they're going to show highlights of people hitting home runs. What do you think?
I think I agree with you. Dude, a cutoff is, listen, a beautifully executed play, and the relay is gorgeous. But I am with you. When you watch a guy with wheels, you know, just hit one right into the corner and he's trying to outrun somebody, throwing it all the way across the field, the third, and you got that slide. I mean, it's just everyone is waiting to see what happens. Did he get the triple? Did he not get the triple? It's different than a home run from that perspective.
Yeah. Yesterday we saw Billy Hamilton hit a triple, you know, one of the fastest guys in baseball. And when it gets down, it's almost like, okay, how far can he go? Byron Buxton's the same way now with the Minnesota Twins. When he hits the ball in the gap and you see the outfielders slogging along, trying to run down the ball, in the back of their minds thinking, oh my God, he's going to hit it inside the Parker. Yeah. No,
is he going to make that turn around second and make it in time? Heck yeah. Also, you know what? Stealing a home base. I just feel like stealing home never happens. You know, it's still a very like rare and alluring thing to me.
Yep, no doubt.
So, all right, in case you want to get your tweets on the show, hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and Taylor or tomorrow Travis will make sure that we get your tweets on the show.
That's it for today. My thanks to Daniel. It's always good to talk to the old friend.
You too, man. It's always great to get two or three or four shows here in the middle of the off season with you every year.
Yeah. And again, be listening for the ring of your phone at about 6:45 Monday when we get word that Taylor is incapacitated. My thanks to Jeff and to Sarah. Have a great day, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
Right.
Love it.
Like a well-oiled machine. Like you've done this before.
Like I've done it before.